KYZ News Talk Radio time is now 8 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good morning, I'm Mark Scott. My guest this hour is David Lifton. David Lifton is an assassination theorist and author of the book Best Evidence. You know, the shooting of a president once again, and this happening Monday, once again reminds us of the vulnerabilities of an open society. And yet, political leaders move freely among the people as a mark of their trust here in this country. We had some questions that arose out of that over this past week. No president has yet seen fit to withdraw himself from the public, from public contact, from public view. And the risks go with the job, because they're the price that we all pay for a government that's close to and responsive to the people, or should be responsive to the people. And as terrible as the threat and reality of an assassination may be, they do not shatter the process of American government, do they? The system provides for that still, orderly transfer of power when it's necessary. However, for the last 18 years, we now come to find that for 15 of those 18 years, we've been looking for the solution to John F. Kennedy's assassination in all the wrong places. According to David Lifton, Americans have been forcing round pegs into square holes, attempting to make the discrepancies fit a pattern dictated by a conclusion based on falsified evidence. There is, according to David Lifton, some best evidence, and we're going to get to that this morning. Good morning, David.
Morning.
David, you say that the body that was brought for autopsy at Bethesda was in fact a medical forgery.
That's correct.
And that the best evidence is on the body of former President John Kennedy, that there, in essence, is a surgically altered corpse. What alterations were made? And I guess before we even get to that, David, how did you come to this conclusion?
Well, I came to this conclusion by discovering an FBI report written by two agents who were in the autopsy room at Bethesda Naval Hospital on the night of President Kennedy's assassination. And they wrote that when President Kennedy's body was taken out of the casket in which it had been transported to the morgue at Bethesda, it was, quote, apparent that there had been surgery of the head area, namely in the top of the skull. No surgery was performed in Dallas, Texas. And if that report is true, someone did something to President Kennedy's body between the time of the shooting in Dallas that afternoon and the time the autopsy was performed at Bethesda that night. And that is, in fact, the major thesis of my book, that FBI report is, in fact, correct, and that the body at the time of autopsy was no longer in the same condition as it was after the shooting. The wounds had been altered, the bullets had been removed, and that the body at the time of the shooting told a false story of the shooting to the eyes of the examining physicians, that the false story became the Bethesda autopsy report conclusions, and those conclusions are the very foundation for the Warren Report and the findings of the House Assassinations Committee.
Between the Dallas shooting and the autopsy a few hours later at Bethesda Naval Hospital in Maryland, that you're saying something happened.
That's right, that something happened to the body, which really is the most important evidence in the entire case. It's really the best evidence. It offers a diagram of the shooting to the eyes of an examining autopsy doctor, and that diagram is the way we find out how someone in any homicide was killed, how many shots were fired, the direction from which they struck. And in this particular case, it's of great importance, of course. That's really the most important evidence, because there were all sorts of conflicting reports about the wounds, about where the shots came from. And one of the things I've demonstrated in my book is that the reason for all these conflicts is that the most important evidence in the case, the body, was altered. And that's why there's so much evidence coming out of Dallas that the shots came from the front, whereas the final autopsy report said exactly the opposite.
David Lifton, I must tell you, when I first heard this, I thought, it's very bizarre. I talked with a man in Coopersville, a man near Grand Rapids, Michigan. To him, it isn't bizarre. And he's a mechanic. His name is Donald Rubentish.
Rubentish.
Rubentish. He's a former Navy petty officer who was stationed at Bethesda's Naval Hospital. He's been telling his children and grandchildren much the same story that you have been saying.
Well, he's been telling his children and grandchildren that part of it having to do with the transportation of the body, the fact that the body left Dallas in one casket, a large ornate casket of the kind you see in a funeral home, but arrived at Bethesda Naval Hospital in a shipping casket, the kind used to ship a body back from Vietnam in, say. And I developed this case that there were two caskets in use that day, and after the book was published, more specifically after Time magazine ran a big story on the book, Reventish came forward and corroborated it, said that he had known about that, and in fact he had. He had been one of the witnesses. Of course, I couldn't find every witness to this, but I found some, and that was what made my book news to one degree or another. But Reventish came forward and corroborated the business of the body coming in a shipping casket at the back in a black unmarked hearse, whereas the Gray Navy ambulance with Mrs. Kennedy had come in the front a little bit afterwards. And by the way, the sequence, that is, that the body got there before she did, establishes that the casket she was empty.
Apparently, discrepancies fit a pattern that was dictated by false evidence, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm saying that someone, another way of saying this is that someone altered the body in order to construct a false solution to the Kennedy assassination and construct that false solution as an integral part of the crime itself. That is, it was somebody set out, I think, to murder the president and then phony the evidence to make it appear that Oswald did the shooting by making it appear that his gun did the shooting. And to do that, you either have to recruit a whole bunch of people in the government to lie about the facts, or you fake the facts, and then those people can report honestly. And I think that's what happened in this case. The FBI got bullets, which had nothing to do with the shooting. The FBI got a gun, which was not the murder weapon. The Navy issued an autopsy report, which had incorrect conclusions, because they got a body which indicated the shots came from some direction they really didn't come from, but the body had been altered. And by getting to the evidence right away and phonying it, it was possible to construct a false solution as part of this crime.
353-1270 is the telephone number that will allow you to ask David Lifton a question that you might have. He is the author of Best Evidence. And if you get your questions and your thoughts in order, call us at 353-1270. WXYZ News Talk Radio Time is 10:17. I'm Mark Scott. My guest this hour is JFK assassination theorist David Lifton, author of Best Evidence. David Lifton, a scientist and a man who is posing some very uncomfortable questions for a lot of people. David, what alterations were made?
Well, basically, when the president was seen at Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas, he had two holes in the body. At least two were seen. There were probably one or two more, but there were two seen. An entry wound at the front of the throat, and that was seen by most of the doctors, and a hole about the size of an egg, 2 3/4 inches across at the right rear of the head. These two holes were the basis for the conclusions formed by those doctors as to the direction of the shots. The doctors thought this hole at the back of the head was an exit wound. They thought the wound at the front of the throat was an entrance wound. And they speculated that the president had been either hit by a bullet which entered at the throat, somehow climbed up the spinal column and exited the rear of the head, or that there were two shots involved. The bullet entered the throat and lodged somewhere in the body, in the chest. And another shot had hit somewhere on the head, they didn't know where, and it exited the rear of the head. But these are the two holes that everyone saw, and both indicated a shot from the front, one or more shots from the front. By the time the body got to Bethesda Naval Hospital, the two holes that were seen had changed in size and shape. The wound at the front of the throat, which had been slightly altered legitimately by the Dallas doctors, a little horizontal tracheotomy incision had been made through it, 2 to 3 centimeters. That tracheotomy incision had blossomed to something 7 to 8 centimeters wide at Bethesda Naval Hospital, according to the report of Dr. James Humes. And that tracheotomy incision, or that so-called incision, now had acquired, quote, widely gaping irregular edges. That's a direct quote from the autopsy. So it had increased largely and was designated an exit wound by the Bethesda doctors, whereas it had been an entry wound in Dallas. Now, on the rear surface of the body, there was what I call a companion entry, a little wound that no one had seen in Dallas, but which was situated on the upper back or lower neck area, and it was a wound which is rather peculiar. Peculiar enough that Dr. Humes called Dr. Perry, the Dallas doctor, the morning after the assassination and asked him, "Have you made any wounds in the back?" Anyway, based on the wounds that Bethesda the doctor saw, the trajectory through the neck was considered back to front, whereas in Dallas, Texas, it had been considered a shot from the front entering the neck. Now, a similar pattern occurred in the case of the head. This egg-sized hole at the right rear, 2¾ inches across in the metric system, that's 5 by 7 centimeters, 35 square centimeters, had grown to 140 square centimeters, according to the Bethesda autopsy diagram. It was an enormous hole at the top of the head, encompassing much of the right-hand side. And beneath the back of the hole, at the lower back of the head, there was a little entry wound no one saw in Dallas. And every single doctor was asked, did you see a little hole beneath the big hole? And they said no. Anyway, based on the two wounds seen in Bethesda, the bullet entered from the back and blew off the top of the head, whereas the Dallas doctors had said it entered somewhere in the front and blew off the back of the head. So the same pattern appeared in both the case of the head and the neck. The Dallas doctor said the shots came from the front. The Bethesda doctor said the shots came from behind. And essentially, that's what I think happened here, that the body was altered to reverse the direction of the shots to make it appear the shot struck from behind.
So that's what the surgical alterations were supposed to accomplish.
Yes, essentially, with this added thing, that in the case of the head, they apparently had to get at the brain because that's where the bullet metal was. And while the one purpose of the alteration is to change the geometry of the shooting, another purpose was to get at the metal. So, for example, when you enlarge the hole in the neck, you can reach in with a surgical instrument and get out metal that had lodged in the chest. And in fact, whereas the Dallas doctors thought the president had a punctured lung and were treating him because they felt there was a hole in the lung. By Bethesda, there was a bruise in the lung. No hole, just a bruise. This a little bruised area at the top of the lung where I think some bullet metal must have lodged. In the same case in the head, the Dallas doctors, the president left with a hole at the right rear, as I indicated, and the brain was in the head. By the time he got to Bethesda, according to two of my witnesses, the body actually came in with the brain out of the head. The hole was huge, and there was no brain inside. The cranium was empty, to be quite specific, to use the words of the witnesses. The cranium was empty. And the FBI reported that the surgery of the head area was quote-unquote apparent.
David, what you say is really incredible. I want to get to the phones here in just a minute, 353-1270, and that will give you an opportunity to talk with my guest this morning, David Lifton, Best Evidence. WXYZ News Talk Radio Time, 1023, and we're talking here on the Mark Scott Show with our guest this morning is David Lifton, author of Best Evidence. It's about the mechanics of a frame-up, who orchestrated it, and how the plan worked. Well, that yet remains to be seen, and let's go to the phones here and take this call. Good morning on WXYZ. You're talking with David Lifton.
Hi, David. This is Betty from Dearborn.
Okay, Betty, speak up, will you, please?
This is Betty from Dearborn. Is that better?
That's fine.
Okay. David, I have not read your book, but I have read the news reprint of part of it. Now, I never did believe the Warren Report. But I had an idea. Do you remember the Bay of Pigs incident where we supposedly were going to assassinate Castro? I've always felt that this was a turnaround and we failed and they succeeded.
Well, there is that theory, Betty, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you asking David what he thinks?
Yeah.
Of what? I don't understand the question. The Bay of Pigs is where we did not...
We failed and the Cubans... Castro succeeded because of the Kennedy assassination.
Well, one thing I can say is that when it comes down to assessing responsibility for this, point is that the Cubans or Castro did not have access to President Kennedy's body. And one of the things about my analysis of this situation, which is so important, is that if the body was altered, the responsibility really goes right to the U.S. government because the government had the custody of the body.
Well, David, I think Betty is saying that it was Castro or someone who was working directly under him or for him who assassinated the president. Is that what you're saying, Betty?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well,
I can hardly hear David.
Kind of a theory is that if the bullets were taken out of the body and alterations were made to the body, I don't see how that would fit with a foreign power because a foreign power did not have custody of John Kennedy's body. The U.S. Secret Service did.
Well, yes, but we never know who was a double agent.
Well, when someone says that, well, it reminds me of, when you talk about who, this question about whether God exists, and someone says, well, who invented, you hear higher and higher, and you get back to who who invented God. You can always postulate a double agent, but although this may surprise you, I really do believe that unless there's evidence to the contrary, you have to take what appears to be the case. Now, in the case of the body, I have found evidence to the contrary, but I see no evidence at all for believing that the U.S. Secret Service was penetrated by a foreign power. In fact, most of those guys are good old boys from the South, and many of them are. And I really, unless there's some evidence that comes forward to show that they, you know, that we're dealing with some kind of a plot within another plot, I'm kind of taking the conservative position, which is that if the body was altered, we start with the U.S. Secret Service as having responsibility for that.
Thank you, Betty, for your call. 353-1270 will put you in touch with our guest this morning, David Lifton. Best Evidence, good morning on WXYZ. You're talking with David Lifton.
Hi, this is Rick from Garden City.
Hi, Rick.
I've been interested in this since I was 16. I'm 28 now, and I've read almost all the books and articles on the assassination. And I wonder what David thinks of the theory that within a half hour after the assassination, the American government knew that it was partially brought about by the Russians, considering Lee Harvey Oswald had went to Russia and all this, and I'm not even sure if Lee Harvey Oswald is in his grave, if that's the right person, if that the U.S. was afraid of a nuclear war. So soon afterwards, they decided to basically cover up the Russian end of it, and they did all the altering in that to fit the Warren report, or Lee Harvey Oswald did it by himself so as not to cause panic in the United States.
Well, David, you do say that Lee Harvey Oswald was set up, don't you?
Yes, I do. Well, first of all, the caller, part of the question is that possibly Oswald did it by himself, right?
I don't believe he did, no. But I'm saying that we made it look that way so that the people of America wouldn't be upset by the Russians.
Right. Let me answer your question this way. In my book, I certainly deal with these two possibilities. You know, was it possible that the U.S. government, having determined some secret truth about the assassination, you know, name your favorite foreign power, I mean, whether it's Castro or the Russians or whatever, the Chinese communists, and that they set out to alter the facts. And I show why I think that idea is implausible. And basically, it has to do with the fact that everything happens so fast. Because we haven't discussed this yet in this program, but if the body was stolen from the casket, it had to be done before the plane took off from Dallas to Washington. And this is a result of the way events unfold that night in Washington, with the casket coming in earlier, shipping casket coming in earlier than the one with Jacqueline Kennedy. But the point is, if everything happened so quickly, how does the government know so much so soon? There's no any evidence that they do. And by the way, you mentioned a half hour. Oswald wasn't arrested for 90 minutes. His identity wasn't even known. No one knows who Lee Harvey Oswald is until 2 o'clock Central Time. The body is stolen before the plane leaves the ground in Dallas between 2:15, when the large casket is put aboard, and 2:30. When the judge arrives for the swearing in. So that requires an enormous amount of information. In fact, it would appear to be impossible. But I give the idea a good play in the book, because I point out what would have to be true if that were to be the theory that explains all this. Of course, you know, if that was really the case, that would be a sensational footnote to history. The idea that the U.S. government had some secret truth, they knew right away what happened and they never told any of us. That would be very interesting. I also find it very implausible, because if the government had that kind of information, it seems to me, and they really were worried about a war, they could call in the autopsy doctor and say, look, for reasons of state, we're issuing a military order to you. We want you to say such and such in the autopsy report. We're going to substitute these bullets, send them over to the FBI lab. I really find it hard to believe that the U.S. government would go and secretly steal and alter the body of the dead president, when they could so simply solve that problem by simply calling in the officials involved and saying, we've got a very major international crisis on our hands, and so we're going to ask you to put out this cover story and then get to the bottom of this, or announce the truth a month or two or three or a year later. And so I think the whole thing smacks of a covert operation coming from within the government, but I'm prepared to have my mind changed if someone can produce evidence that, in fact, the body was altered, but it's in this benign sense, you know, benign plot.
And 353-1270 is the number that will put you in touch with our guest this morning, David Lifton. We're talking about Best Evidence.
Yeah, hello, Detroit, talk to me on WXYZ. Hello, Detroit.
WXYZ News Talk Radio Time is 10:33. I'm Mark Scott. My guest, our guest this hour is David Lifton, the author of Best Evidence. And David Lifton, the military, certainly, particularly at Bethesda Naval Hospital, are not going to like this startling new evidence that you have put together. And I know that you have come under fire already from one particular man, Representative Hal Sawyer, who has said that he dismisses this whole thing totally as crackpot. That's the way he determined it.
Yeah.
Please respond to that, David.
Well, you know, it's I've always said that I can deal with anybody who wants to debate evidence. I really don't know how to deal with just, you know, childish name-calling. I would like to know Mr. Sawyer's response to the discrepancies in the record regarding the size of the head wound. I'd like to know why his committee didn't adequately investigate the FBI report that there was surgery to the head. And I think every listener should know that Mr. Sawyer sat on part of an investigation that was officially told by Paul O'Connor, the medical technician who opened the president's casket at Bethesda, that the casket was a shipping casket and that the body arrived in a body bag, and that investigation was so incompetent that they published that information. That's where I found it, writing my book. They published it in their report and didn't even know what it meant. I mean, here is a group of attorneys on the staff of the House Committee on Assassinations investigating a murder, and the attorney handling the medical area, who's now in Philadelphia, Andrew Purdy, on the U.S. Attorney's staff, was so naive. I mean, he's a well-intentioned man, but he was so naive that he's told by O'Connor that the body arrived in a body bag, and he routinely publishes the information, and they didn't know what a body bag was. I called him up in August 1979 after the report was published. I had just gotten my copy in the mail, and I saw the words body bag, that it arrived in a body bag, and I said, Andy, do you know what a body bag is? And he said, no. I said, did the body really arrive in a body bag? He said, if I wrote body bag, this man said body bag. Well, you know, after that, I told him what a body bag was. He got very flustered. He was gracious enough to help me locate these witnesses. And so that's how I developed this whole business about the body bag and two caskets. But Sawyer, I don't think a fellow like Sawyer really understands the full implications or has bothered to look at it closely. In his favor, I will say this. The theory sounds bizarre until you look at the evidence. In other words, it's not obvious. If someone says, oh, the body was altered, everybody has the right to say, well, that's crazy, because it really does sound crazy. The problem with this whole case is that the evidence supports exactly that proposition. And the problem I found myself in as an author is, how do you defend a proposition? You know, how do you get people to look at the evidence? Because I really think that once you look at the evidence, the case is irrefutable. And I've said many times that the problem here is psychological, not logical. But it does sound crazy.
David, Hal Sawyer, Congressman Hal Sawyer, was one of two who voted no in the Assassination Committee report, the other one being Robert Edgar. And it's interesting to know, and Hal Sawyer is a very competent trial attorney, one of the best in the country.
I covered I was there for, I was at the hearings. I was there for Public Broadcasting Service during the medical evidence, and then I was there during the acoustic hearings. And I remember Sawyer questioning Dr. Barger and making fun of him, that the fact that the acoustics test didn't really prove anything, and that if all he was willing to say was that the evidence showed that there was a fourth shot to 50% certainty, that, well, that this wasn't good enough for him. Of course, two more experts came back and did a more refined analysis and showed that the evidence that there were shots from the front based on the Dallas police tape of the shooting was 90 or 95%. Apparently, that wasn't good enough for Mr. Sawyer either. I really think at some point people just adopt a position on this case and then behave like lawyers. They either defend it or, you know. I like to feel that my own conclusions are really based on the evidence. And if someone shows me new evidence, well, I'll change my conclusions. But I think Sawyer behaves like an attorney defending a client. And the client in this case is a Warren report written by his good buddy, Gerald Ford.
They've come in with conclusions, and they're trying to make the evidence fit their conclusions.
Well, to make it fit or to attack any contrary theory saying something's crackpot. I just don't think that addresses the issue of the evidence.
Mm-hmm. Also, the media, the journalists in this country have viewed the assassination thing always as totally crackpot, I believe, by and large. And it's it doesn't say much for the journalists in our country when they are still viewing it as crackpot and not willing to look at the evidence at hand.
Well, it depends on the journalist. I've been in 35 cities approximately. My publisher sent me around the country, and I really learned a lot about this country because, you know, I never had a trip like this. And I've been in and out of all the different cities, and they're brief trips, but still you get impressions. And I have to tell you that out in the countryside, when I mean the countryside, I don't mean farming area. I just mean in the cities that are not New York and Washington, all the rest of the country, I think you get a pretty fair shake. I mean, people are interested to get on TV programs, and there's a reasonably rational discussion of the evidence. It's in the media centers in New York and Washington that there's a very haughty attitude of what is really plausible, that prejudges everything. And so I think the country, you get a pretty fair shake everywhere but in those cities where you have, I don't know whether you want to call them smart-aleck journalists or know-it-alls, people that really, you know, they're the kind of, the story that I could tell are the kind of people that all talk to each other before the election and then don't understand how Richard Nixon got nominated because they all voted for George McGovern, you know? They all go to the same parties. It's very ingrown and very other-directed, too.
On WXYZ, you're talking with David Lifton. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Okay, this is Charles from Detroit.
Yes, Charles.
Yeah, okay. What he's saying is something that so many people in this country, and especially in the Detroit area, you know, has felt for years and just have failed to or been afraid to come out and say what they felt. There was a number of people who also held that conclusion that those shots were fired from the front and who were in Dealey Plaza at the time the president was assassinated. And these people who the Warren Commission interviewed and who submitted testimony contrary to the position that the Warren Commission, you know, had decided to take, there were a great number of these people turned up mysteriously dead within the year or 2 years after they appeared before the Warren Commission. I think the number, you know, was something like 22, 23 people who died mysteriously. And these were the thing that all these people had in common was that they differed with the Warren Commission in the direction from which the shots were fired.
Want to comment on that, David?
Yeah, well, first of all, there are a lot of people that said the shots came from the front. Approximately two-thirds of the eyewitnesses said so. And that has always been a part of the record of this case. And, of course, the commission dismissed them by relying on the autopsy report going to this principle of the best evidence, the best evidence being the autopsy. These contrary reports simply were delivered by mistaken people. However, I don't agree with the idea that the people who gave contrary evidence have been systematically eliminated by any kind of a conspiracy. I unfortunately have to admit that certain conspiracy theorists in this area, I think, have gone way overboard. They published this article back in Ramparts magazine many years ago, 1966 to be precise, and it started this idea, and I've never seen it been able to be put out. There have been some deaths. For example, I think it's serious that mobsters were rubbed out in the summer of 75, I believe, that may have given evidence to a Senate committee, but I really find it hard to believe that the deaths connected, the deaths, many of which are natural, I think, connected with somebody's witnesses, are anything sinister. You know, a witness gives a response to the sheriff's department, he gives a report to the FBI, testifies. That's his story. I don't see anything to be gained. He's become a part of the record. I don't see anything to be gained by knocking him off.
We're talking with David Lifton here at 353-1270 this morning on WXYZ.
Talk to me. Communication. It begins like this.
Talk to me.
Hear me. Communication. It begins when people discover the voices within them.
Talk to me.
And the voices around them. Hear me. Communication. It begins with radio. With WXYZ. The first, the only, the original Talk to Me station in Detroit. WXYZ News Talk Radio, 1270.
WXYZ News Talk Radio time is 10:44 with Mark Scott. On this morning, we're talking with David Lifton, the author of Best Evidence. And good morning. You're talking with David Lifton now on WXYZ. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. My name is Mike. I'm from Detroit.
Yes, Mike.
I'd like to ask your guest a couple of different questions. First, I'd like to know what his motivations were for writing the book. And if he feels that this book is going to make any difference or if it's going to be looked at in terms of another theory or another idea of how of what happened.
David?
Yeah.
He wants to know your motivations for writing the book.
I guess there's a lot of scenarios that have been put forward on the assassination, and I'm wondering if this is going to be something different, if he feels it should be something, I'm sure he feels it should be something different, but if it's going to be looked at as something different from the public and from people who are involved in big politics.
Mike, let me say from my point of view, I read the book, and I think that it will be viewed differently if people read the book.
Uh-huh.
Well, my motivation for writing this book, you must understand, I began writing this book in 75. I had researched it since 66. My motivation for writing it was to get out what I thought was the proper explanation or the true explanation for the facts in the case. It's probably difficult for anybody to imagine what it's like to spend so many years on one project. Well, I never expected it to take this long because in the beginning my conception of what was going on here was so clear and so on the mark, I think, about the business of the body being altered. It looked really easy to explain and research. I figured I'd take a semester or two off from graduate school, which I found boring, and quickly tabulate the wounds at both ends of the line. That's all was necessary. I'd write up a little monograph and get it published. I had no idea the kind of involved project I was getting into. As far as what's going to happen next, I don't know. I know one thing, that it's not going to, whatever's going to happen isn't going to happen fast. Any idea I had, and I confess to having it, that the Justice Department was going to open up best evidence the day after publication and say, well, look here. Look at all this evidence. Why, God, we're going to have to reopen this case. Well, that's just not going to happen. What may happen, and what I hope happens, is that over the course of the next year or two, with the publication of this book, with students reading it, that it will change the ideas. And you have to change ideas first before anything can be done.
It seems to me that one of the important things for anything to become a public issue is for it to get a lot of media play. Do you feel, I know you were on the Larry King show some time ago, and I heard that broadcast. Do you feel that by being on these sorts of programs that it's going to make a large difference? I also have one other question that doesn't deal with this that I want to ask.
Well, but I think in the final analysis, what's going to really count is whether there's some courageous reporter somewhere or some courageous news executives.
I guess that's what I'm asking.
Do something with the issue.
Yeah. There's one other question I want to ask you. It deals with a man named Carl Oglesby. Are you familiar with him?
Yes, I am.
Are you familiar with his theory that he puts forward called the Yankees and Cowboys?
Yeah, he has a political theory, it is a theory.
And the thing that's interesting is that it deals precisely with the question that you put forward, is that is the government or are government agencies working for particular or people or groups? And Carl Oglesby puts forward that particular idea.
Yes, he does. Well, again, I stress it's a political theory, the Yankee Cowboy Division. I don't know. You know, we'll have to see what happens when all the facts come in years now, whether the Yankee Cowboy thing holds up as a theory. Mm-hmm. I agree with it to a certain extent. I think it's an interesting way to catalog the evidence, or not the evidence, but to catalog the motivations behind, an assassination plot in 1963 America.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike, that's very good, and we appreciate your call here on WXYZ. David Lifton is my guest. WXYZ News Talk, Radio Time, 10:51 with Mark Scott. Our guest, best evidence writer, David Lifton, Disguise and Deception in the Assassination of John Kennedy. And good morning. You're talking with David Lifton on WXYZ.
Hello?
Yes.
This is Jim from Detroit.
Okay, Jim.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay, pretty good. I'd like to ask Mr. Lifton a question here.
Go ahead.
As far as, since his book came out, is there anything you can share with us as far as public reaction by the individuals that conducted the autopsy, the reaction to the book, and also from Mr. G. Robert Blakey?
Are they talking, David?
Yes. No, they're not. It's very interesting what's happening. As far as there are two different questions here. The autopsy doctors have made no public comment as far as I know. What I'd really like to do is see a very, very well thought out, formalized debate. I'd love to debate those guys and see what happens. I've been trying to interest some news organizations in interviewing them to get their response on the public record. I think it's part of it. If they disagree, if they agree, whatever. I doubt they agree, but I'd like to see what the reaction is. Blakey has made no public comment, with one exception. He told the New York Times before he read the book that it was absurd. Then he read the book, and a journalist called me up the other day to tell me that he just interviewed Blakey because they're going to use some of his remarks on a program. And this journalist, you know, knows my book and is very sympathetic to it and seen the film and interviews we did. And he said Blakey was saying he was trash and that I was paranoid and obsessed. Again, I'd like to get Blakey into a debate, and I'm sure that's going to happen because his book, which blames the president's killing on the mafia, is out now, and the formal publication date is in a few days or weeks.
David, I have a pretty good relationship with Blakey. He's been very helpful in giving me some evidence to the pertaining to the assassination committee. And, of course, you know he's working on a book as well, so he may have an axe to grind there. I will give him a call, and maybe we can link something together.
Well, that'd be fine.
All right. Thank you, caller. 353-1270 is our number here to put you in touch on WXYZ. Good morning. You're talking with David Lifton.
Yes, my name's Doug, and I'd just like to say, at the time of the assassination, my father and I, my father worked for a newspaper in Dallas, lived there, and in his possession, he had...
Okay, so much for that, apparently. Good morning. You're on WXYZ with David Lifton.
Oh.
Yes, sir, you're on the air.
I'm sorry. I just would rather not talk. I'll call back. Thank you.
Okay, apparently got stage fright, David. It does happen from time to time. And let me ask you, what about the House Assassinations Committee? Did they examine this evidence?
No, they did not. Blakey's has made some comments to this reporter to the contrary, but they really didn't. What they did is they had the FBI report, which said that there was surgery in the head area, and they published six words of an affidavit, which raised more questions than it answers, saying that this surgery was determined not to be true on further inspection. And the implication of that is that at some point it was judged to be surgery, and then it was determined not to be true. But they basically did not. They based their conclusions on the x-rays and photographs of the body. And
David, it seems incredible that no one but you has pursued this line of reasoning before. The examining of the x-rays and the photos that were taken. Why? I don't understand why the Warren Commission... What was the Warren Commission's reaction to this material?
Well, first of all, the Warren Commission did not know anything about the idea that the body had been altered. The Warren Commission, I think, was deceived, but operated basically in good faith. I mean, I don't agree with their conclusions, and they cut a corner here and there, but they basically accepted the autopsy findings as legitimate. The first time anybody on the Warren Commission, and their investigation was concluded, of course, in the summer of 64, but the first time anybody knew about it was when I confronted Professor Wesley Liebler, this law school professor at UCLA in 1966, with the FBI report that said there was surgery. He said, "My God, you know that you found new evidence," and within a week or two, he drafted a memorandum to Chief Justice Warren and to every member who had been on that commission, pointing out the fact that I had found this evidence that there was surgery. My name is mentioned in the memo twice, and a copy of the memo went to the Kennedy family.
David, we have just about a minute left, and we're going to have to wrap this up. I hate to see you go because it's a fascinating and interesting way that you have approached this whole situation. I've reported on Lewis Stokes several times because I came out of the Cleveland market as a television news reporter a number of years ago. I have to say that he is the kind of a man who certainly would look at this evidence and look at it very closely. Has he been approached?
As far as I know, no. I must say, I did not go around trying to approach people before publication. I just got my work done, and I published it, and everything that you see taking place is just the way it is. In other words, there was no attempt to politic behind the scenes before it was published. There wasn't any time, and it really isn't my nature to do it.
Thank you, David Lifton. The book is Best Evidence. David Lifton, a scientist, writes about the disguise and deception in the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Talk to me. Communication. It begins like this.
Talk to me.
Hear me. Communication. It begins when people discover the voices within them.
Talk to me.
And the voices around them. Hear me. Communication. It begins with radio. With WXYZ. The first, the only, the original Talk to Me station in Detroit. WXYZ News Talk Radio, 1270.
WXYZ Detroit.
WXYZ News Update, I'm Ruth Byrne.
The accused would-be assassin of President Reagan, John Hinckley Jr., is appearing at a preliminary hearing this morning under tight security. Meantime, the president's physician says Reagan looks well this morning after 9 hours of sleep last night. Kentucky State Police say striking miners fired shots at a mine foreman in a bid to halt non-union coal production during the nationwide soft coal strike. The only injuries suffered by the foreman were scratches from broken glass. The business and civic organization New Detroit is expected to make its official response to Governor Milliken's tax shift proposal today. Also expected is its reaction to the Blue Ribbon Budget Panel report for the city of Detroit. In the ranks of state police, freeway patrols have been restored to its former levels of last fall. Some 77 of the 80 troopers laid off last year are back on the department payroll and the freeways. From the WXYZ Weather Center, sunny to partly sunny today, breezy, high near 70. There'll be increasing cloudiness overnight with a low of about 50. Then windy and warm tomorrow. There may be a chance of a late day shower or thunder shower, high near 70. Right now, it's sunny and 52 degrees. I'm Ruth Byrne, WXYZ News.